This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to this continuing special series brought to you by Place to Be Nation's main event. We are counting down to number one. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo. This is part two of our 10-part series, counting down Place to Be Nation main events, top 100 greatest WWE wrestlers of all time. This is part two. If you listen to part one, we're going to dive right in. We're not going to recap all the criteria and everything and the history of the countdown and everything. You can listen to all that on part one. So if you're listening to this one, then you listen to the first part, so we don't have to go through all that again. But let me bring in my co-host and compadre, co-host of the Kings of Sport, and my co-host, the Godfather, Nate Milton.
What is going on, Brother Scotty? Back at it again for the next installment of our countdown series. And to the people that had some problems with some of our selections last time, I'm going to quote the great philosopher Eric Cartman. Whatever, I do what I want.
You will respect my authority.
Exactly.
Excellent. We had some interesting picks in the first 10.
And spoiler alert, you're going to be really mad at my first selection this week. I already know. You, not only you, but everybody. Everybody at Place to Be Nation, all the people listening, maybe my grandmama, God rest her soul. People are going to be angry and upset with the person I have at number 90 on my list.
Oh, boy. I may have you go first. I know a few people will probably get mad at the number 90 I have because I know we didn't have this guy on at all. But so if you're this is the first episode of our series you're listening to, stop. Go back and listen to episode one because that's when we counted down our 100 to 91. And we also are going along with the PlayStation.com list, which just quickly recapping, we took all the nominations, all 130-something, and did a bunch of math, counted it all down, and came up with the official PlayStation.com top 100. So I'm just stopping there so we don't have to repeat all that. All right. This is episode two. So this episode we will do 90 to 81. So why don't we hop right in? This time I'll let you go first, Brother Nate. I went first for number 100. So you go first, and I'm going to let you dive right into the deep end of the pool, apparently.
All right.
Give me your number 90. Oh, by the way, as we give our numbers, as we did in episode one, we'll give what the PlacementNation.com list number was, was at that list as well. So, for instance, Nate will give his number 90, I'll give my number 90, and then we'll do the website's number 90. So go ahead, Brother Nate. You've already stirred the pot. Serve it to us.
All right. Number 90 is a person that I would assume a lot of people that submitted ballots, I would assume this is somebody that made a lot of people's top 40 or 50, maybe even 30, because he's that damn good. And he's somebody that I love and respect. It might be my favorite wrestler of the past 20 years. But the reason I have him at number 90 is because his WWE window has been so short, at least to this point. And I'm getting ready. I'm putting on my flame-proof suit because I don't care what you say about me. Number 90 on my list, Scotty, is the phenomenal AJ Styles.
Wow. Okay. I'm gonna let you have your floor because I'm going to say something that might make people even more angry. So, go ahead. Go ahead.
I love AJ Styles. Anybody that's ever heard me on a podcast knows how much respect I have for this dude, whether you're talking about his Ring of Honor run, his TNA run, his New Japan run, even all the way back to WCW when he was tag teaming with Air Paris and they were part of the Cruiserweight Tag Team Division. back in WCW. So I have a lot of respect for this dude and the work that he's put in. And he has been arguably the best performer in the WWE each of the last 2 years. But it's a really short window. And when you talk about the greatest of all time, to me, tenure is something that is one of my measuring sticks. You know, we talk about work rate and mic skills and you know, the connection with the crowd and the way that they transcend to be and have that mainstream popularity as some of the metrics that we use to make these choices. Longevity's in there for me too. And AJ unfortunately doesn't have that. Now he's got the title. You know, he is a two-time WWE champion. He's held the U.S. title twice. He's had some of the best matches in the company over the past 2 years with guys like Roman Reigns, John Cena. I cannot wait for the WrestleMania matchup with Nakamura. That is something Scotty and I have talked about many times on the main event. So this is not shaded AJ. This is just me saying I don't see AJ as a quote-unquote WWF, WWE guy. And granted, he is that. And the more we see him, the more he becomes that. But for me, I don't have AJ as being, you know, in my top 25 of the greatest WWF wrestlers of all time. Now, if this was just greatest wrestlers of all time, AJ would be a lot higher because I have that much respect for the dude. But on a WWF, nah, you're stuck at 90, bro.
Well, I think I have you trumped, literally, on this list because you have him at 90.
Uh-oh.
I don't have him at all.
Ooh, wow.
And again, if this was greatest of all time, he'd be probably like in my 20s, most likely 30, but probably either high 20s or low 30s. But yeah, window's just too small. Now I have people on here. I have one person on here that you'll probably think, well, you're kind of a hypocrite, but not really, but we'll get there. She's not, is not on this list. That particular superstar is a couple of episodes from now. So no, I'm not upset at all. You're a better man than me. I don't know. I'm on it all. So I'm sure I'm going to get trashed for that. But that's
yeah, like we said on the main event, like we were talking about Wrestler of the Year, and AJ was our Wrestler of the Year. Mm-hmm. Like that last half of last year, that kind of propelled him because he was on the borderline for me. And he, you know, last episode I told you about a wrestler that I put in that helped me put Biggie in. AJ is the wrestler. Like, when I put AJ in, I'm like, you know what? If AJ's getting in, damn it, I'm going to put Biggie and Sting in, too.
Okay. Fair. I like that. I think it's a fair philosophy. Again, if we did this list 2 years from now,
yeah,
AJ would definitely be on my list. He'd probably be in my top 25. Maybe even in my top 20. But 2 years is just not enough compared to the other guys that are on this list. Now, some people may disagree, and that's fine. That's good. We don't like uniformity. It's dull. My number 90 is a guy that's got a much wider template than AJ does. However, he probably doesn't nearly have as many three-star matches. But this is a guy, I put him on my list simply because this kind of gimmick usually doesn't last as long as this one has.
Mm.
And he may be, quote, in the way right now in the company. Like, he's just a nuisance. But I think he does deserve the respect of being one of the most enduring gimmicks in the history of the company. My number 90.
Uh-oh.
I know the guy next to me thoroughly disagrees with this. The Big Red Machine, Kane.
Ooh.
I know a lot of people think Kane is a shitty wrestler. But Kane has served his purpose in the WWE. He has served his purpose. He's a big monster. You're not expecting a boatload of work rate out of him. He's just supposed to be a big dude. Now, when you think of Kane, you obviously compare him to The Undertaker. Is The Undertaker a better wrestler? Hands down. But to have a gimmick like that, this goofy thing with a mask and a, quote, burned face and all this nonsense, and to have it last this long speaks volumes. Mm. I give good old Glenn credit. This guy was Diesel the Dentist. That's what I call him, because I just morph his two gimmicks together in 1995 and 96. He was Diesel the Dentist, or Isaac Yankum Truck Driver. I don't know, whatever. In any event, he survived a lot of garbage and ended up having one of the coolest debuts ever at Bad Blood 97. Yep. Here we are, 20 years later, here he is still in matches. Is that a good thing? Probably not.
but still in main event matches.
Still in main event matches, but somebody had to eat the pin that night, you know? But here's a guy, again, who has such an enduring gimmick. He's part of a lot of great moments in the history of the company over the last two decades. He deserves a spot on this list. Now, I have him at 90. I don't have him at, like, 7. But I have him. He belongs on my on the list for me somewhere. Just because of the longevity of a great gimmick during a time when a lot of guys were coming and going, he was a mainstay. Now, should he be around the company now? Yeah, I don't see why not. Maybe not as, you know, I wouldn't put him in the main event. But again, we all know why he was in that match at the Rumble, but that's another discussion for another show. But to have a gimmick like that last 20 years and to connect with the crowd both as a face and a heel speaks volumes to me. So that's why I have him at 90.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that. I think Kane is somebody that a memorable character, somebody that was involved in a lot of big storylines. He's not the greatest wrestler in the world, but you know, I was talking with somebody in the live chat, I believe, a couple months ago about this when we're talking about ring work and work rate. And to me, yes, the important criteria, but for a WWF list, that to me wasn't my top criteria, because for a lot of times in this company's history, in-ring wasn't the ultimate goal. You know, it was in characters and entertaining storylines, and the in-ring was like the cherry on top.
Right.
So with a character like Kane, man, you talk about some of the memorable angles he's had God bless poor Shane McMahon's testicles.
Yeah, well, that's true. And blew up his limo.
Like, Kane's been involved in some crazy gimmicks and angles, but you remember them. Like, if I say Katie Vick, everybody listening to this podcast has an immediate reaction. He's not somebody that's forgotten. He's not somebody that, you know, you have an opinion on Kane. And to have an opinion on somebody, you got to care about him in one way or the other. So, yeah, I think Kane's a good choice.
Okay. Let's go to PlaceBeNation.com's list, and it's number 90. Finley.
Ooh, that is a random pick that it I kind of like.
Yeah, very random. I think a lot of it is because he wasn't really ever meant to be on camera. I think he was only meant to be an agent, but then they needed a guy in 2000, whatever it was, 05, 06, and there he was. He just kind of showed up. So
yeah.
That's what it seemed like anyway. So
he had a good little run with Booker's cabinet or whatever they were called.
Or his Royal Court.
The Royal Court, yeah.
Yeah, so... All right, number 89. I never thought after first watching this guy and watching his stuff early on in his career, I would have thought no way was I ever going to have this guy on this list. But you know what? He makes my list because of like the last like 6 years of his career. Mm. Great face, I think an even better heel, and a guy that gets disrespected because early on in his career he couldn't stay healthy. But once he stayed healthy, he's become one of the most enduring characters. And actually one of the most lovable ones, because he was pretty cool at the convention I was at Rumble weekend. My number 89. He's got many nicknames, but my favorite nickname for him all time was Sexual Chocolate. Mark Henry.
Yes.
It's sexual, baby. I'm going to get you all greased up. Oh, I love that. You should use that now. although somebody going to get their wig split is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, how many people in the history of the WWF can claim that they have a theme song written by Grammy winners or Oscar winners?
I know, right? It's pretty impressive. Can't argue that. Yeah, if you asked me in like 1999, do you think I would ever, in 20 years from now, would I put Mark Henry on my top 100? I'd be like, fuck no. The guy would wrestle 8 months, pull something, and then you wouldn't see him for a year and a half. And then, yeah. But I feel like since like 2010... he's really busted his tail.
Yeah.
And he became ECW champion. He was world heavyweight champion. He had that great retirement fake out and attacked John Cena.
Yep.
He was bending frying pans. He was awesome. He was managed by Tony Atlas. I mean, I think the last like 9 years or 8 years of his career puts him on his list, on my list, because he was a great power guy. A lot of people think he didn't deserve it when he won the World Heavyweight title, but you know what? He made the best out of it. And I think he had a great run. and he recovered from a lot of injuries and a lot of bouncing around, a lot of dopey attitude era nonsense. You know,
you good, you good.
He's the only guy in the history of the company that ever said on camera, "You got a penis," and and actually survived his career.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just he was always a soft spot for me because he was a power guy who stayed healthy towards the tail end of his career when they really needed a guy in that slot and delivered when he needed to. So that's my number 89, Sexual Chocolate, the world's strongest man.
Good pick. Mark Henry, spoiler alert, he's going to be on my list a little bit later. Not on this week's episode, but I've got Mark Henry pretty high up. Not you know, ridiculously high, but
cool
for all the reasons you mentioned. And Mark Henry, to me, is somebody certainly deserving for a place on the list, if for nothing else than his salmon jacket retirement, one of the greatest segments in the history of Raw.
Mm. Yes, I agree with that. Come on, baby. Why do they call you me Sammy? And then, of course, he had a he has a child that's a hand.
Yes, with Mae Young. Like so, all the stuff they threw at this dude, like he should have sunk. But like we were talking about in the last episode, if you've got talent, ultimately it might take a while, but it'll shine through.
Yep, I agree. All right, what do you got for 89?
This is a guy, going back to our conversation on the last Pod Blast, when we talked about guys that have hurt their ranking by coming back. This is a guy I think falls into that category. Because had he not come back, not only do I think it would have been probable that he would have been in my top 50, I think it would have been his destiny. Number 89 on my list is Alberto Del Rio.
Okay. All right.
Like, this is a dude that I had a streak where I loved me some Alberto Del Rio, particularly in 2011 when he won the Money in the Bank, and I was at a Raw in Hampton. As a matter of fact, it was the Raw where John Cena won the world title from Rey Mysterio and CM Punk came back.
Ah, yes. I remember that. Yep.
It was the first time he debuted the Cult of Personality theme and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And Alberto Del Rio had come out early in the show, and he was just kind of hanging out, you know, waiting to make his entrance. He was like at the very back of the ramp. And me and my buddy were, you know, in various states of sobriety, and we're just yelling, "Rio! Rio! Rio!" And finally, he just kind of turned around and like, just kind of waved and went, "You gonna cash in tonight, Rio?" And he just kind of gave us a shrug. I'm like, you know what? I like you, Alberto Del Rio. That's connection with the audience. That's one of our criteria. And he personally connected with me and my drunk buddy. And, you know, I think Alberto Del Rio was somebody who was a good promo, not the greatest promo, but he was a really solid promo, a solid in-ring worker. You know, he had a believable style. He was able to get a submission finish over, which was something that I think is more difficult now than it might have been in the past, with the kind of knowledge that fans have about MMA and some of the way submissions work. You know, he's a two-time WWE champ, two-time world heavyweight champ, two-time United States champ. And again, won a Royal Rumble and won Money in the Bank in the same year. So I think Alberto Del Rio was a really good character. And what has him this low on my list, Scotty, is that second run. Coming back with the whole Zeb Coulter deal and Mexican America. And it just never clicked for me. And I think if he had stuck to that first run with him and Ricardo Rodriguez, he'd have been much higher on my list.
Okay. Fair enough. I don't know if I have Del Rio anywhere. We'll have to see. Be pleasant surprise. I know he was in my original master list of like 150 guys. That I do remember. All right. PlaceMeNation.com's number 89. This is an interesting one. I don't know if I have this guy on my list. I'm curious if you do. The site's number 89. Terry Funk.
Ooh. Terry Funk did not make my list.
I don't know if he made mine. I don't think he did. I think I might have thought his run was too, you know, again, template was short because it only lasted barely a year. But, okay.
I'm gonna say something. I'm going to get controversial again. Yes, Terry Funk had a longer run than Sting, but I say Sting had a better run because I was not a fan at all of Terry Funk in the WWF. And granted, it might have been because I was somebody that loved Terry Funk when he was in the NWA and had those matches with Flair and him and Muda were part of the Gary Hart Corporation fighting Sting and Flair. And, you know, Terry Funk was somebody that I had a lot of respect for and ECW was great. I never bought into Terry Funk as a WWF character.
He was awesome. And watching some of the house shows that that JR and I have done on our rewatch, on the refresh, I gained a lot of respect for him. I had it anyway, but he was awesome. Mm. But yeah, it is a kind of a short time. He did come back in 98, actually 97 and 98. And maybe the window's kind of small, but a lot of people think that's enough. So
he came back in the early 2000s too and wasn't great.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. That's right. Yeah. Oh. Okay. But that's the site's number 89. All right, Brother Nate, number 88, The Playmaker.
Now, this is funny because I got through, not bashing, but certainly disparaging the WWE run of one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. And now I'm going to back that up by claiming number 88, one of the greatest WWF light heavyweight champions of all time. That is Taka Michinoku.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't do myself any favors with that Terry argument.
Oh, wow.
But let me tell you why I like Taka, though. Here's, again, these first 20 or so rankings on our list are very subjective, maybe more subjective than the later rankings where we get more of a consensus. But Taka was somebody that jumped off the screen to me, man, because as somebody that was a big fan of the WCW Cruiserweight division, I never bought any of the WWF's light heavyweights except for Taka. Taka was a guy that was credible in the ring, wasn't a great promo, obviously, and that's nothing against Taka. You know, he's trying to cut promos in his second language. You know, we see today in 2018 that the WWF has had trouble booking Star Jam that don't speak fluent English. So the fact that Taka didn't get over on the mic as much is not a big deal to me. But I thought Taka was good in the ring, man. He was the only legitimate thing about a division that was littered with the likes of S.A. Rios and Scotty Too Hotty and Brian Damn Christopher. You know, he gave the belt legitimacy instead of the other way around. And I like, you know, I like the stuff with Kai and Tai, him and Funaki and Togo. So, you know what? Taka Michinoku, nobody else is going to have you on their list, but I will. So you got that going for you, which is nice.
Hmm. The Dalai Lama. that's an interesting argument. Okay. All right. Taka Michinoku. And he had some good matches. He had some very good matches on pay-per-view.
By the standards of the time, to me, like Taka Michinoku, he wasn't WCW cruiserweight level, but for what the WWF was doing at the time, Taka was head and shoulders above everybody else.
Hmm. Okay. My 88 is a guy that, on our last episode, was on the company countdown, and I wasn't sure if I had him on or not, but I did, because he is easily one of the best early heels in the history of the company, and helped out the spike of one of the legends of this business early in his career.
Mm.
My number 88 was already on the .com list. Larry Legend.
Mm.
Larry Zbyszko.
Yes.
I had a feeling I had him on my list, and I was correct. one of my favorites. Here's a guy who was a great tag guy. And you'll hear him again. That's another guy that if you want to hear more great stuff about him, check out the Titans of Wrestling podcast archive on PlaceMeNation.com. But I watched it, and he was tremendous. Had the huge heel turn on Bruno. Had a great feud, culminated with an awesome cage match at Shea Stadium in 1980, and then vanished. And obviously, spent the rest of his career in the other promotions. Obviously, the AWA, and he was one half of the enforcers in WCW. And of course, he was the announcer on Nitro, et cetera, et cetera. Now he's in the WWE Hall of Fame. But he was an exceptional heel back in the day. And his matches were very good. I always thought he was a solid wrestler, and he is one of the first early heels in the television era of the WWF, and then into the WWF itself. So I have Larry Legend himself, the proprietor of Larryland, Larry Zbyszko, as my number 88.
I have no problems with Larry Legend. I think obviously, I might like his AWA and maybe even some of his WCW stuff a little bit better, but Larry Zbyszko was always solid wherever he went.
Mm-hmm. All right. PlaceFeedNation.com, number 88. Let's see here. Let me find this tab. Was a guy that I already had on my list, and that was, of course, Dusty Rhodes.
Yes.
So he was number 88 on the PlaceFeedNation.com list. All right. Time for number 87. My number 87 is my third woman on this countdown on my list.
Oh, look at those Scotty Progressive over here.
I am very progressive. Yes, I am indeed. And she's not my last, by the way, either. Obviously, I have a soft spot for her because she was in my favorite faction of all time. And even though her career, her life and career went down a dark path in the end, she deserves a lot of credit because she an unheralded position when she came to the company and took advantage of it to the best of her ability. My number 87. This might cause some controversy.
Uh-oh.
The ninth wonder of the world. China.
Yes.
Because a lot of people are going to think, why do you have China higher than Trish? Because Trish was really good, but China was a trailblazer. Because when you first saw her at the In Your House Final Four pay-per-view, she was like something you never saw before. And she was an ass kicker. And then finally, she transferred into a pretty hot woman and still a great wrestler. Now, obviously, she made Playboy. She had the great feuds with Eddie. Obviously, she, you know, the first woman to ever win a man's title when she beat Jeff Jarrett to win the Intercontinental title at No Mercy 99. And she was just so different. And, yeah, obviously I have a soft spot for her because she wasn't DX. But beyond that, she was a tremendous worker. And she was a great character at a time when someone like her was unheralded. Mm. And so I think she deserves a spot on my list. She deserves the credit for being a trailblazer and a different kind of work than any female worker we ever saw. My number 87 is China.
I am not mad at that at all, Scott. And a little spoiler alert, a little sneak peek here. I've got China on my list on this very program, so I'm going to save my thoughts on China for a little bit later because, yeah, to me, you can't have a list of 100 of the greatest WWF stars ever and not include somebody so important. So, yeah, I'm going to save my thoughts, but, yeah, China deserves a spot.
Great. All right. All right, you're 87.
All right, my 87. Again, somebody that jumped out to me and spoke to me specifically, and this is why I think, you know, representation does matter when you're producing entertainment because you never know what part of the audience you might touch with one of your characters. And so number 87 on my list, one half of the Soul Patrol, Mr. USA himself, Tony Atlas.
Wow, okay.
And the reason on the list is because he was somebody that was larger than life. And again, you know, I don't want to, you know, get too deep in the woods, but when you are somebody of color, you know, your options are kind of limited when it comes to who your heroes are and who you can model yourself after. That guy looks like me. So that means I can do this. I can be anything I want. I can even be Mr. USA Tony Atlas and have a foot fetish, if so be it.
And hide all your money under your mattress.
Exactly. But you know, you gotta think about the way this dude looked, man, and that tag team with Rocky Johnson and becoming the first at the time the WWF tag team champions of color. Like that to me was something that really spoke to me. Tony was not great in the ring. Nor was Tony great on the mic, but you know, we saw that during his run in ECW. Mm-hmm. Tony is not the most loquacious, if you will, but just to have a start at magnitude. And I think Tony had better runs in other places, but as a as an African American wrestler that jumped off the screen to me, like, you know, you can have Hulk Hogan. Tony Atlas to me, Tony Atlas was kind of like my Hulk Hogan. You know, that larger than life superhero kind of figure. Doing these feats of strength. So yeah, Tony Atlas, you know, not one of the all-time greats, but certainly, you know, if this is our Hall of Fame, Tony Atlas, you know, he's got a little wing in the Hall of Fame, a little shoe closet, if you will, and I'm sure he'll like that.
Yeah, I guess so. And he actually had a good Mid-South run too. That I was watching same kind of the same time as JYD. So that was that. All right, that's interesting. You might not be, I'm sure you're not the only one that's had Tony Atlas on his list. So, all right. PlaceManation.com's number 87 was, let's take a look here. We've already mentioned one of his tag team partners currently. Neither of you or I have mentioned him yet. Kofi Kingston.
Mmm.
So Kofi is Police Be Nation's number 87. Interesting.
I like it. I like it.
I like Kofi too. All right. Brother Nate, number 86.
You know what, Scotty? A lot of times we get here on these microphones and you know, some of the listeners, they might treat us any type of way they like it, and it's not right. You know, it's not fair, Scotty. And to them, I would just say, don't treat me like a woman. Don't treat me like a man.
Wow.
Don't treat me like you know him. Just treat me for who I am. China is the next entrant on my list, man.
Wow, so you only had her one notch above me. Wow, yeah. That might be the closest symmetry we have in this countdown.
And
I am pleased.
A lot of the reasons that you gave for China are some of the very reasons that I had. And I know going into this, she was one of the women that I had argued with Stacy about. And obviously Stacy has a great wealth of knowledge when it comes to the women competitors. But I made the argument that, you know, was China the most technically proficient woman ever? No. Was China the greatest woman on the mic ever? No. But I think that China had so much influence in the way people viewed how you could book a female competitor that she was not just an arm candy or side piece. You know, she came in as Triple H's bodyguard. Like, that already shows that she's a different kind of character than many of the valets and managers that we've seen before. You know, I think she's the most important woman to ever work in the company. And she would be a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, if not for, you know, some kind of personal, dare I say, petty reasons with some people in the front office. But she's in for me. You know, I think one of the criteria on my list is, are you somebody that is not only a star in the world of professional wrestling and a star to fans, but are you transcendent? And to me, China was, man. You know, whether you want to admit it or not, China had a period where she was one of the few wrestlers that people that weren't fans could, you know, my mom or my aunt or, you know, my school teacher, they could, you know, name China. You know, she was right up there with Austin and The Rock and Triple H and Mankind. China was in that mix, you know, being on Mad TV, Saturday Night Live, on the cover of TV Guide. She was one of the people that helped in that Attitude Era get this product over to the mainstream masses. So for me, you know, she wasn't the best women's wrestler ever, but I definitely thought that she made great strides for women in the business, particularly in this company. And, you know, it's unfortunate she's no longer with us, but China is on my list, man.
I'm pumped about that. I really am. And I hope she makes it to PlaceManation.com's list. I'm not sure if she did or not, but because I remember reading all the nomination articles, but I'm looking forward to seeing if she made the big list. I'd like to think she did. But I guess it depends on other people's opinion of her. So my 86 is another one of those ones that I think a lot of people are going to give me crap about because they might think I have this guy too low. But I think his peak came too late to be any higher. If we do this list 5 years from now and he's still where he is now, he'll be higher. But I hated him the first, like, 4 years of his career. He had a great few months, and then he kind of dipped again, and now he's back. So his too many ebbs and flows for me to put him any higher than this. My number 86, let's just say some people may not think this pick is very awesome. My number 86 is The Miz. I like The Miz. I do. Obviously, I wouldn't waste a spot on him if I didn't. But I know a lot of people probably have him maybe in the 50s, maybe even in the 40s if you're feeling generous.
Yeah.
But as much as he's an important guy in the last, 6 years of this company, I just feel like he's been a great character. I think he's a good wrestler. Not a great wrestler, but a good wrestler. He's got a mic. I mean, there's not many more I have on this list that are incomparable to him in that aspect, at least in the last 15 years. I can't have him any higher because he's just been too inconsistent. He was, obviously he was in, the first Tough Enough and all that, and he was on Real World and all that jazz. But the first, 5 years of his career were just utter annoyance. I absolutely could not stand him. Loved the tag team with Morrison. Loved when he turned heel on him. And then, obviously, he had a pretty solid, if not unspectacular, 5-month run with the World Wrestling Federation title, WWE Championship. Cashed in Money in the Bank in November and then of 2010 and held it till, late April of 11. And he's actually one of the few heels to have successfully defended the WWE Championship at a WrestleMania. So he does deserve credit for that. But then once that happened, 2012 to 2015, he kind of vanished. And then he became a babyface, which he's just not good at. Not as good as he is a heel.
No.
And I feel like if I did this list again in 2024, if he keeps going along this path, I think I'll have him higher. But he definitely belongs on the list as one of the best characters of the last decade. But I can't have him higher than this because he's just been too inconsistent. Too many ebbs and flows. But he does belong on the list.
I'm not mad at that. I think, to me, The Miz, the later part of The Miz's career has been really good. That early part, it had some hits and misses. I think he got the WWE title way before he should have. But recent Miz has been really good. I even liked Miz back in 2011 when he was had that short run with Truth. And they were that tag team together, the bitter heels that were mad that John Cena and The Rock were taking up all the attention. So, yeah, I'm not mad at your selection here.
Okay. I think...
even though it would have been funnier if I had just been like, really? Really?
I don't know if I could have believed it, though. All right, you're 86.
All right, this is a... I love how these early picks are so random. We each had our own rhyme and reason for coming up with these lists, but I think our list, much like everybody else's, and certainly the composite list from Place to Be Nation, shows that, this list, while we have parameters, is very subjective. And so this next guy on my list, it might be appropriate that he's number 86 because he is somebody who has been pretty much 86 from any future employment with this company ever. Because he committed one of the most gangster acts in the history of professional wrestling, and that is jacking Vince McMahon for money. That is JEFFJARRET Jeff Jarrett.
Wow. I love that pick. I love that pick.
Remember what we talked about last episode where we talked about Chavo Guerrero, where he was kind of a B player at everything? Jeff Jarrett is that and then some. He's the better B player at everything than Chavo. I think Jeff Jarrett is somebody, whether you're talking about the original country singer character or the crew cut Don't Piss Me Off Jeff Jarrett or the misogynist Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Jarrett is an old school wrestler. He's not the guy in there with the flashiest moveset, but he can put together a good match. He's not the guy with the best promo ability, but he's always going to give you a solid pro wrestling promo that'll get you to boom. And for me, Jeff Jarrett, I enjoyed in the WWE. He was somebody I watched a lot when he was in the USWA, and I was like, how are they gonna make me hate this guy, because I loved old school Jeff Jarrett in the USWA with the long blonde hair. But they made me hate the dude. And I think the initial feud with the Road Dogg and the With My Baby Tonight controversy, that was fun. He won the IC title. It's funny that we both mentioned China, because I think one of Jeff's more infamous matches, if you will, was the match with China. And you know, the whole misogynistic woman-beating character that Jeff Jarrett had, something that certainly would not play in 2018, but for the time, it fit. I like Jeff Jarrett, and I like his run in the WWE, and it's a shame that he will never, ever get any type of credit or acknowledgement from the company, at least not as long as Vince McMahon's alive. But, you know, he started TNA, which is something I love. And like I said, man, he had one of the most gangster moves in wrestling history, holding Vince McMahon up for that big time payday. Mm. So Jeff Jarrett's on my list.
Okay. I like that pick, actually. I mean, he's in and out of the company for a solid, you know, 5 years. Yeah. And one of the best heels, multi-time IC champion. And, yeah, he kind of gangster went out the door in a most memorable fashion.
His tag team with Owen, I think, is underrated.
It's fantastic. And he obviously was the one who was most obviously devastated by Owen's death. And I think that affected him for the rest of his WWF career.
Yeah.
All right. Now, PlacementNation.com's number 86 is a guy that probably neither you nor I have. And I didn't think this many people had him on the list. This might be a really, really, but maybe not. PlacementNation.com's number 86, Ivan Koloff.
Ooh.
Obviously former WWF champion. But obviously not, I mean, he was in WWF for a while in the 70s, but he made a lot of lists. In fact, I won't say who, but one person had him as high as 22.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Nate, 85.
85 for me is a special attraction. And, you know, special attractions are important in the world of wrestling, particularly when you talk about, you know, the territory days. And this is another guy, much like Tony Atlas, that resonated with me. I'm sure he resonated with a lot of fans of color. And not just fans of color, but anybody that just enjoyed a good, big, boisterous character. And that is the big cat, Ernie Ladd.
Good pick. Good pick.
Ernie, he had the legitimacy from coming from that football background. He was a big dude, but he was so athletic, particularly for that time in professional wrestling. He was a big dude that could move. He had a great look. He was a frequent title contender. Like I said, you know, that special attraction you bring in, put him in there with the guys. He's always in the title mix, but you're never going to put the belt on him because he's not going to stick around for too long. But to me, the best thing about Ernie Ladd was he was a big guy that was also great on the mic. And that's not a combination we see a lot, Scotty. Like, you know, nope. We often get big guys that are great and powerful and effective with their physical charisma, but they're weak on the mic. And I'm thinking of, you know, maybe somebody like a Brock Lesnar, who's not the best at a promo, but he's a physical beast. Or we have guys that are great on the stick, but they don't have physical intimidation. Ernie Ladd had both. Like, he was a big dude. He could move. He could work. But he could get those fans to hate him because he was just so great on that microphone. So Big Cat Ernie Ladd is number 85 on my list.
Okay, I like that pick. I love Ernie Ladd in Mid-South. Again, I keep referring to Mid-South because I watched a whole boatload of them on the network. Ernie Ladd's awesome. That's a great pick. That's a great pick. My number 85, this caused a lot of controversy when I talked about it with some of the guys in the chat and some of the other Place to Be Nation members. This is my one legitimate guy. This is the one guy you could legitimately say is a jobber. But to me, he is the king of all jobbers.
Uh-oh.
Because he exemplified a solid worker who just did his job and did it well. And he's with the company for a long time, longer than people think. And he's the only guy, it's Ted DiBiase, that was announced from two different places. My number 85 wrestler came from both Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and in the West Indies. My number 85 is the great SD Special Delivery Jones.
Ooh.
He deserves a spot on my list. And I got a lot of crap for this, and I don't really care. SD Jones was the model worker for the World Wrestling Federation throughout his time. And he was there, God, like 12 years? Because there's an MSG house show on the network from, like, I think it's like 76, and he's in it.
Wow.
So he's with the company a lot longer than people think he was. And he had some decent matches throughout the, and, you know, throughout the late 70s and the early 80s. But he was the perfect guy who put on solid matches. He had a stinker here and there. But he always did his job and did it well. And he went in there and he put on some decent offense. But in the end, he did the right thing for the business and put over all these up-and-coming stars and guys that came in and stuff like that. And all those kind of guys. All these incoming stars. Guys you knew were going to be stars. Like you say about Tito Santana. Well, the first guy you had to get by, if you were going to make any kind of impact, was SD Jones.
Yeah.
All right. And he won in, he set the precedent for the rise of King Kong Bundy to the main event of Wrestle 2.
Yeah.
By winning in the mythic 9 seconds, which is not 9 seconds, it was 26 seconds, but it was still a very short time. And I think he deserves credit for that. So this pick caused a little stir, but I think we need I needed a legitimate jobber,
yeah,
on my list because he did the right thing for the company. And when you think of memorable jobbers on house shows, Superstars Challenge, you don't think of Gino Colabello or AJ Petruzzi or any of the guys that D'Amato Northeast. You think of SD Jones. That deserves a spot on the list.
That's a surprising pick, but I like it, man. Like I think again. This first 20, you're going to have a mix of a lot of different characters and personalities over years, and a lot of it comes down to, you know, our personal preference. And I think somebody should make a flow chart, like a WWE jobber flow chart. Like, if you can get past this, if you can get past SD Jones, you advance to, you know, maybe Brooklyn Brawler. And if you can get past Brawler, you go to Coco. If you can get past Coco Beware, you get Tito, and then you're on your way.
Exactly. That's perfect. That's probably what the George Scott and Pat Patterson sheets look like, probably. So,
hold on. We can't put the belt on him. He didn't beat Tito.
Yeah, oh, no. We need a 3-month program around the loop. He didn't beat Tito at the Nassau Coliseum. Well, then he doesn't count.
Like, and if you think about it, like if we were doing the NWA or WCW list, I think the comparative figure would probably be Pez Watley, because that's
Jaska.
The guy. To me, yeah, back in Georgia, Pez Watley was the dude. It's like he's never going to win a match unless it's against some other jobber that had the unfortunate booking of having to put Pez Watley over. But he's going to make other people look really good, and that's what SD Jones did for the WF.
Yep. So there you go. That's a pick that I know is going to scratch some heads, but that's the point of this list. A lot of these numbers.
A lot of controversial picks on this episode.
I like this a lot. PlaceMeNation.com, number 85. Arguably one of the best, sadly no longer with us, but we'll see if he makes either of our lists. But PlaceMeNation.com is number 85, the Beast from the East, deep in Asbury Park, New Jersey, the great Bam Bam Bigelow. So,
you mean the co-star to the classic Major Payne starring Damon Wayans?
Yes, Major Payne. That's awful, Major Payne. Okay.
Don't give me that Billy Jack bullshit. You said you were going to kick me in the throat. Oh, I did I? Oh, great. Go watch Major Payne after you finish listening to this, people.
By the way, we have an episode of Primetime on here in the studio. And guess what vignette is right now, Brother Nate? Americana Pizza just pulled up. I got to see within these pizza.
Hey, aren't you?
Hey, aren't you? Oh my god. I want to have Dusty Rhodes come to my door just wearing a white shirt pizza on it. And then he holds the pizzas like books. That's tremendous. Oh my god. Alright. Alright. Number 84.
Yeah.
Another great wrestler of color. Which seems to be a nice prevalent topic on our first couple of pop-ups.
We're including a lot of wrestlers of color and a lot of women. We're very progressive.
We're very progressive. The top 50 are all white dudes, but that's okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No. My number 84, one of the greatest tag team wrestlers of all time. A lot of people think he got screwed at one point in his career, but I think in the end, he is a Hall of Famer. I actually saw him go into the Hall of Fame live. And in the end, probably one of the most beloved, I think, of the last probably 15 years. My number 84 is one you can dig. Sucker! My number 84 is Booker T. And what's funny, Nate, about that is when Harlem Heat was at its peak in WCW, I actually liked Stevie Ray better. I don't know what drugs I was taking at the time, but I was a big Stevie Ray guy. But I used to hate Booker with a passion. But he, like Bret Hart, they all realized that he was obviously the better star, and yes, we all know where his career went. And he had a great run in WCW. One of the toughest things I had to try to defend when I had my pro and con podcast with Dylan Hales about Triple H was the whole 2003 fucking build to WrestleMania 19. And I contend, as much as I love the guy and praised him in our first pod blast, if Goldberg was never coming to the WWF, Booker T would have won the title at WrestleMania 19. I am damn sure of it. I guarantee it. I guarantee you that if Goldberg was never coming, Booker would have won the belt that night. I swear to God. But they needed to keep that boost up and keep that boost up and make Triple H as hated as possible.
But so you can't put the belt on a criminal.
Yes. What? Oh, that was terrible. I've been very diplomatic about my whatever I talk about when it comes to Triple H. And that storyline sucked. I don't disagree. Yeah. I hated it. Except for the Tourette's Goldust. That was great. WrestleMania! That was just...
Yeah, we've talked about it before, Scotty. Like, I think I didn't have a problem with Triple H winning. Like, I think that's the right call. But you can't have Triple H win with that story as the backdrop.
No, and have every Booker and then take like 7 minutes to pin him. That was probably the other crap part of it. But Booker otherwise came here with a lot of fanfare. I think he got blackballed from the beginning because he accidentally hurt Steve Austin at the King of the Ring when he did the kick and he fucked up his neck or something, but whatever. Happens. But Steve never cared. He didn't get mad at Booker or anything. But I think Booker recovered from that abysmal bestiality storyline with Kurt.
Yeah.
And his King Booker run is literally one of my favorite heel things of the last, like, 15 years. Oh, hell, King Booker! Fantastic. He was awesome. And were the matches with Batista great? They were solid. And then Booker stood up for Batista in a shoot fight backstage, which I think he deserves a lot of credit for. But Booker is arguably one of the best workers in the last 15 years in this company. And definitely deserves a spot on my list at number 84. So there you go. Booker T. Can you dig that sucker?
Oh, tell me you just didn't say that. You didn't just say that.
Oh, God. And he was he was actually close by when Vince McMahon did one of the dumbest things in the history of the company.
I was going to say, yeah, he had to stand there as his boss got his jollies on by saying the N-word on a pay-per-view and had to respond just in character. Like,
that makes me wonder.
Oh, should earn him a spot on the list.
Yeah, exactly. No. I'm assuming I have a feeling you have Booker somewhere.
Yeah, I absolutely have Booker on my list. You know, if we were going by favorite wrestlers of all time, Booker being my 25.
Oh, okay.
I am a huge Booker T fan. You know, one of the other shows I do is Keep It 2000 with Brian Mann over on Post Wrestling.
Yes.
And we watch a lot of the 2000 WCW Nitros. And Booker T is legitimately one of the few bright spots
in
that
definitely.
Era.
Definitely.
And when he first got to the WWE, man, I was worried. Because I did not think that they were going to have a lot of respect for him. You know, Booker T could have easily just been remembered as the guy that got his bum cold in that grocery store skit. And that could have been it.
Milk, you know, does a body good.
Yeah, we've seen other guys that came over from WCW fall by the wayside. So that could have been it. But it's a testament to not only his in-ring work, which was, I don't think it was ever great in the WWE, but it was always solid. But also to his character work and his mic work and his connection with the fans. Like, he was great as a babyface. I think the fans were behind him. But when he went to that King Booker role, man, it just took off. So I'm like Booker T as a commentator, and I know a lot of the listeners hate him. But I'm going to save more of my Booker T praise for later because I definitely have Booker T higher on my list.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, so you have your 84, correct?
Yes. All right. My number 84 is another classic pick. He is one of the great wrestling families in the history of the sport. He's somebody that is a former WWF tag team champion and one of the greatest teams in the country. And, you know, he might have had a great match with a guy named Bruno Sammartino. Maybe y'all heard of him. Number 84 on my list is the one and only, the late great Black Jack Mulligan.
Okay. All right.
Black Jack Mulligan, you know, the Black Jacks were a team that I was really into. And I went through a big stretch, particularly when I first became a wrestling fan, Scotty, where tag team wrestling was my jam. And I don't know what it was about it, but maybe just that, you know, the era that I grew up in where you had teams like the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express and Demolition and the Legion of Doom and you know, the Funks and the Brain Busters and the Four Horsemen. You know, tag team wrestling was my jam. The Freebirds and me, Black Jack Mulligan and the Black Jacks in particular, that was a throwback style. And I dug his work. That gimmick is something that has been tried to copied many times over the years to varying levels of success. When you look at performers like JBL or Trevor Murdoch, it's not an easy thing to pull off. And I thought Black Jack gave off that air of legitimacy. Like, he looked like somebody that could kick your ass in a bar fight.
Right.
And, you know, one of the most prominent members of a wrestling family that still, you know, has roots to today's product. You know, when you talk about somebody like a Bray Wyatt or Bo Dallas. So Black Jack Mulligan is somebody that many of our younger listeners might not know, but has seen some clips on the network, but they don't really know about the dude. But I'd say, you know, do yourself a favor, go back and watch some Black Jack Mulligan because he was really good.
I concur 100%. I think Black Jack reminds me a lot of when I talked on the last Pod Blast about my 100 pick, Mr. Fuji. I think similar yeah. comparison there. Great tag team guy in the 70s and, you know, different roles in the 80s, but. I like that pick. All right. PlaceMeNation.com's number 84 is a guy that I have further up on my list, so I'll get into him later in a future Pod Blast episode of this series. And that is Ace Cowboy Bob Orton at number 84. So that's a guy that I'll have later on, so I'll keep my comments to later. All right, Brother Nate, you're 83.
Yes, 83 is another... another tough Texan or Southerner, if you will. He is somebody who was part of my first wrestling man crushes. You know, I know a lot of people know my love for that man called Sting, who we mentioned in our last Pod Blast. But what really got me into wrestling, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on a podcast before, was my mother. She was a fan of wrestling. She grew up in Texas. And so our jam that we kind of watched together was World Class Championship Wrestling.
Of course.
And I love me some Von Erich boys. Like, to this day, even though me and Kevin Von Erich see very little similarities with political leanings, I still love me some Kevin Von Erich.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to this day, I love the Von Erichs. I even love Ross and Marshall, the Kevin's kids. Like, I'm a fan of the Von Erich family. Okay. And Kerry Von Erich was a star of that family. And when he made his way to the WWE as the Texas Tornado, I was through the roof. Because kids at school are like, who is this guy? Who's this Texas Tornado guy? And, you know, you know Scotty back in the day talking wrestling at the lunch table. When had some insider info, you were the coolest kid in the room.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, you may know him as the Texas Tornado. That's Kerry Von Erich, guys. He had some great matches with the Freebirds. Do your homework.
I love dropping shit like that.
Yes. I love Kerry Von Erich. And this is a bittersweet pick, and he's probably a little higher than he needs to be, even if he needs to be on the list at all. But there's sentimental value tied up with me with Kerry Von Erich. He was somebody that, man, I think he might have been one of the first guys that I saw come into a promotion that I wasn't already cognizant of. You know what I mean? Like, he's somebody I saw in World Class, and I saw him make the jump. Whereas, you know, other guys, I don't think, maybe would have been the only one, but everybody else pretty much, they were either NWA, WCW guys, or WWF guys. And I saw Kerry go from world class to the WWF. He had some really great matches with Mr. Perfect. He's a former IC champ. He was like a big deal free agent that meant a lot to me when I was watching. Unfortunately, we know how his life kind of turned out. And the latter part of his WWF run wasn't great because he was battling some demons. But, man, I thought Kerry Von Erich was a great character. Never was great on the mic, even at his peak. Kerry was never great on the mic, but he looked like a million bucks. And, you know, for what he was a decent in-ring performer, especially when you put him in there with a guy like Perfect. So Kerry Von Erich gets a spot on my list.
Okay. I want to confirm that I was looking ahead on my list. I won't give you the number, but was it this episode or the last episode? Let me see. I think it was this episode. This episode earlier on, we talked about Terry Funk.
Yes.
I do have him on my list, actually.
Ooh.
Not for quite a while. All right. My number 83. Let me go back again here. My number 83 is a guy that PlaceMeNation.com already had, and I'm pretty sure you may have him on your list, too. But most of the stuff I like from him is from the Attitude Era, and I thought he was a great worker, one of the few great mid-card workers during that time, especially for a guy his size. My number 83, Rikishi.
Ooh.
Rikishi a lot. He was not good as the Sultan, but and he did make a difference, but his run is Rikishi from late 90s all the way till the end of his career. And he had good genes because he's the father of our current SmackDown Tag Team Champions.
Yeah.
I was just a big fan of Rikishi. I thought he was good in the ring for a guy who had, kind of an unusual size or an unusual shape, I guess. And he was over, he was Too Cool's boy. They did the cool dancing. I used to love that Death Driver finisher he had, which they made him get rid of, which I thought kind of sucked. And I think he was good for the Attitude Era. I think he was good in that role in the mid-card. Yes, the whole turning heel and saying that he did it for he ran over Steve for the Samoans was, which would have been cool if, like, Sika and Afa and, they all came to Yoko. Although Yoko was dead by then. Well, he died that year. That would have been. But other than that, he stuck around, returned face, multiple tag team champion. I thought he was a solid guy during the era. And definitely deserves a spot on my list. So I have Rikishi at 83.
That's a good pick. Like, Rikishi's not on my list. I think he just barely missed the cut. But I do love me some Taking It to the Streets, Fatu.
That's right.
He was like the positive role model for the kids in the hood. It's a woefully missed 90s character, but I still loved it.
And the ugliest jacket ever.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I dug that. I dug that. And remember, there was an episode of Raw because I watched it. And we did it on the Justin and I did it on our Vintage Vol Refresh, where they were going to do a storyline where, like, he had the mysterious evil Samoan relatives who would look up the ramp while he was wrestling, trying to corrupt him back into the evil Samoan ways, which was fucking ludicrous. But anyway, I love Rikishi. Great wrestler on my list. All right, did your 83, right? Yes, you did.
I think that was 82, wasn't it?
No, that was my 83. Oh, no, I did Booker, so then I did Rikishi. So, no, you're 83. You're up. You're 83.
I think, Scotty, I know we've had issues on the main event with our numbering, but I'm going down the list. I've got one guy left.
Oh, we got two guys left. Oh, do we miss something here? Uh-oh. Let's see. Well, let me recap. Let me start over.
I might have gone twice. I might have started twice, and you might have gotten skipped.
Oh, okay. Damn. Well, let's see. All right. So 90. Let's recap real quick, so we're both on the same page. 90 Kane, 80 Mark Henry, 88 Larry Zbyszko, 87 China, 86 Miz, 85 SD Jones, 84 Booker, and 83 Rikishi.
Okay, because I've gone through AJ Styles, Alberto Del Rio, Taka Michinoka, Tony Atlas, China, Jeff Jarrett, Ernie Ladd, Jack Mulligan, and the last one was Kerry Von Erich.
Oh, so
I got one more guy.
Oh, so you must have done two in a row, and I must have didn't do one. Oh, okay.
So Kerry, you were so enthralled with my picks.
Exactly. All right, so number 83 on PlaceMeNation.com. So I'll go right and do 82 then, because you just did it. So Kerry was your 82 then.
Yeah.
Okay. PlaceToBeNation.com's number 83 is a guy that you'll see on my list later on. Not this episode. Sid.
Ooh. The master and ruler of the world.
Of the world. They were live, pal. So Sid on the number 83 list. On number 83 on the PlaceToBeNation.com list. I have Sid on my list. I know he's further up. All right, so my 82.
I do have to give Sid credit because the whisper yell promo style, still, it makes me smile because nobody talks like that in real life.
I know. It makes it even better. Nobody acts like Sid in real life.
If you and I were arguing over the numbers like we just did, Scotty, like, Scotty, you know you skipped two numbers. That's very irresponsible of you because the people need to be confused. who does that? That rhythm.
The people need to be confused. I think you should make a t-shirt that says that. I think you and Marcus should have a t-shirt that says that.
People need to be
the kings of sport where people need to be confused. Oh, that's fantastic. All right, my number 82.
That'll be my slogan if I ever run for political office.
That would be tremendous. Milton 2020, where people need to be confused. Oh, fantastic. All right, so my number 82 then is a guy that we already mentioned on PlaceToBeNation.com's list, and I'm very proud to have him on my list because he's easily – this is more of a favorite pick because I just love this guy. He's one of my favorite guys throughout the Federation era. Made a brief comeback in the company in 2000 and 2001 and was very, very brief in a Hall of Fame. And that is, at number 82, Haku.
I love Haku.
That's just a personal pick for me. I just love Haku. Solid guy, solid worker, loved him in the Islanders. He was great King Haku. He was like Bobby's workhorse in the family.
Yeah, yeah.
And I stood next to Haku about 3 years ago at a convention in Jersey, and Haku could still, let's put it this way. If the bar stories are true, I'd be hiding under my, I'd be drunk. I'll tell you right now, because I wouldn't want to screw with him. I just love watching Haku.
He had a great second act in WCW, too.
Yeah, he did. He was Meng. He was in the Faces of Fear, which is another freaking great tag team. Yeah, so that's just a personal for me. I love Haku. Haku's one of my favorites. And he's on the PlaceToBeNation.com list. Now, so since we're caught up now, number 82 on the PlaceToBeNation.com list was one half of a great tag team. The Dynamite Kid was number 82 on PlaceToBeNation.com's list.
I like that pick.
I like that pick, too, actually. I don't know if we'll see down the list if I have him. I know I have, maybe I have his partner. We'll see. All right. Finally, for me, my last pick of this pod blast, episode 2 of this series, number 81. This might be controversial. In fact, I was going back and forth on whether I wanted him on my list, and most people are going to be like, you heathen. But don't forget, this is wrestler, not superstar. So even though he was a manager for a hunk of his career, he did wrestle enough, I think, to probably justify that putting him on the list because he's just one of the greatest talkers of all time, and he did look decent whenever he wrestled. And we sadly lost him probably about 8 months ago, and he'll be missed. My number 81... the greatest host in the history of primetime wrestling, The Brain, Bobby Heenan.
Will you stop it?
You'll get tossed out of here. Well, if you smell bacon, that's because the lights are hot here, as the Rosati sisters are sitting behind him. Yeah, I love Bobby. And I think Bobby deserves a spot on the list because he did wrestle just enough to justify being considered a quote wrestler. Obviously, he was one of the greatest ever, if not the greatest manager ever. And I just think he belongs on the list because whenever he wrestled, what he did, which was show some ass and get the shit beat out of him. And he did win a WrestleMania match because I think he did win. I think he was part of that tag at WrestleMania 4, and I think they got the win there. So, and of course, he looked good in a weasel suit whenever he wrestled. So, I have Bobby Heenan as my number 81, Brother Nate.
I'm not mad at that at all. I think that's a good pick. Bobby did not make my list, primarily, you know, for the reason that you mentioned, in terms of I viewed him more as a manager and a commentator. And he was easily top five in both of those categories as a manager and a commentator.
Easily. Oh yeah.
I love Bobby the Brain. It's a shame that it's a shame not only that he's no longer with us, but that for the last part of his life, we did not get to hear that wit.
Absolutely.
And to that, like, Bobby to me had the quickest mind to tongue ratio in the history of the sport.
Absolutely.
To be able to think of something and to, you know, elaborately or eloquently express it to the audience. And again, he was somebody that didn't have an ego. Like, I'm sure he had an ego. Anybody that is good at what they do has some sort of ego, but he was not afraid to show ass, like you mentioned. And
absolutely.
Do what was best to prop up the baby faces. So, yeah, that's a good pick, Scotty.
Yeah, no, definitely. All right, Nate, wrap it up for us, brother. You're number 81.
All right. My 81 is another pick that has a huge sentimental value to me. And some of the listeners might not agree with it. But if you don't agree with me putting one of my favorite tag teams on the list, I've only got one word for you. Damn.
Ha, ha, ha.
Number 81 for me is Ron Simmons, a.k.a. Farouk, one half of the APA, who we saw numerous times on Raw 25 playing.
Yes, we did. Yep.
Former three-time WWE Tag Team Champion with JBL, of course. And the reason he's on this list for me, again, going back to something that we've talked about with these first Scotty, is who jumped off to me at the screen? Who jumped off the screen to me? And Ron Simmons is somebody that I was a fan of all the way back to WCW. Like, one of the most impressionable and resonant moments in wrestling for me was when he beat Vader to win the WCW title. And just as a little black kid, that's like, wow. Like, I was
pumped. It was one of my favorite moments.
Yeah. And just the way that, like, the crowd in Baltimore and the way it came across on the screen, it's like, wow. You can do anything. I could be world champion. Because up to that point, you know, theoretically, I could have been world champion, but I've never seen anybody that looked like me hold a world title before. But Ron Simmons did it. So when he went to the WWF, I was nervous.
Yeah.
And I had good reason to be nervous, because his initial with the company, his initial gimmick, should I say, was not great. He was Farouk, and he came in this ridiculous outfit, and he was paired with Sonny, and they made him shave his goatee, which made him look not intimidating and threatening at all. He just looked goofy standing next to this little blonde lady. And I was like, damn, they've torn down my hero.
Yep.
But they made up for that with The Nation. I love Ron Simmons in The Nation of Domination. I loved him in the APA. He was always a realistic tough guy, a realistic badass. Not the best wrestler, but he was a good punchy kick guy. You know, some guys are punchy kick guys and they're good at it. You know, Steve Austin, great grappler, but another part of his career, he was a good punchy kick guy. And I think Farouk and JBL, they were good punchy kick guys. And
yes,
so
they were. Yep.
I think the other thing that he doesn't get a lot of credit for is he could cut a good one when they allowed him to.
Yes.
And we saw that with The Nation. Like, some of the stuff he was saying when he was in charge of The Nation of Domination was amazing. I'm a big fan of Ron Simmons. The person as well as the performer. And so Ron Simmons for me, I wanted to see how high I could reasonably put him. And I think 81 is how high I can put Ron Simmons on a WWF list. But if this were just wrestling in general over the history of time, he would be way up there just because of the personal connection that I have to the character and to the person.
Yeah, no, I mean, that beating Vader, that was actually one of the coolest moments that I ever saw too. I thought that was awesome. I really wanted him to beat Luger at Halloween Havoc 91. Unfortunately, that match is atrocious. And I'll blame Luger for that. So there you go.
I think that, when in doubt, blame Lex.
Exactly. All right. And finally, to wrap up our second episode of this series, PlaceMeNation.com's number 81, a guy that might be on both our lists. I think let me think. Yeah, he's on mine. I won't tell you when. PlaceMeNation.com's number 81, Dolph Ziggler.
Ooh.
So I knew a lot of people would put him on their ballot, and he's on mine, but he's a little further up. All right. 20 down, 80 to go. And I've had a lot of fun, Brother Nate. We've come up with some stellar names out of the blue here.
I was say, if Eric Bischoff is to be believed, that's always a big if. I think we just made some money tonight, brother, because controversy can create cash, and we might have had some controversial picks tonight.
We definitely did. We definitely did. No doubt about it. So just to recap, here is my 90-81. Kane, Mark Henry, Larry Zbyszko, China, Miz, SD Jones. I know that's going to draw one. Booker T, Rikishi, Haku, and Bobby Heenan. Brother Nate?
Yes, and my 90-81 are Giles, you can hate me now, Alberto Del Rio, Taka Michinoku, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, China, who I'm glad that Scotty and I had an agreement on that, Double J Jeff Jarrett, Big Cat Ernie Ladd, Black Jack, the Texas Tornado Kerry Von Erich, and number 81 for me, Ron Farouk Simmons.
All right. So once again, we have 20 down and 80 to go. Check out all the great stuff on tbnation.com involving the GWWE lists, greatest of all time, all the other pod blasts that all the other great guys are doing, and of course the written stuff on the website as well. And of course, please listen to Nate's and my regular show, Place to Be Nation's main event. Every other week, we talk everything. WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA, New Japan. It's a blast.
Yeah, because the people need to be confused.
Exactly. They need to be confused. I'm telling you and Marcus should do that. For Brother Nate, I'm Brother Scott. Hope you enjoyed it. And coming soon, the next 10. Who will it be? Stay tuned.